All right.
Okay. All right. Welcome everyone to the Bob Show. This is Youngblood Holden, one of your hosts, and this is a very exciting day for me because this is the best podcast in the world, even though it's the first one. And Bob, can you explain to everybody why this is the best podcast of all the podcasts?
Because it's what's happening today with me, and I've gotten this far, and every day is better, so this has to be the best one for today. It'll be superseded by tomorrow, but as of today, it's what Bob's doing, and what Bob does is the best.
I like it. I like it. Bob, who are you and why should people care?
They shouldn't care, and I like Zappa's quote, I don't have to be remembered. They ask him, what do you want to be remembered as after you're dead? And he says, I hope people don't remember me. I agree with that. And what was the first part? Why am I Bob? Who am I? Who am I? I'm a potential going in all directions.
Okay. All right. So, Bob, first of all, I want to say happy New Year. It's getting ready to
Yeah.
be 2011. Also, Bob, can you turn down your microphone a little bit? I think it might be too loud.
All right,
See if you can do that.
how does that seem?
Take it down one more notch.
Wow.
Okay, yeah, that should be better. I don't want it to be overblown.
Right, it makes you soft, but
Okay, I'm just looking at the input and the output over here. I'm just making sure it's okay. You're good. You're good. I think you're good. All right. So, what's in store for 2011, Bob? This is the last day of 2010. What is in store for us, my friend?
Yeah, you asked that. Looking at my call, my Skype call with you, it was at 12:11 when you asked that question, and it's now just past 12:22. That's the amount of time we've been on. Let's see. 2011, 2 times 11 is 22. 22 is a big number in your life, so this is the 22-ness that's really coming in. And I guess 2012 will be 122. Switch numbers around to get 122, the original 22. So we're definitely in the 22 zone on this moment. So what's going to happen? Well, Ion said to me a year ago, "You ain't seen nothing yet," and certainly that was true a year ago. A lot happened that I didn't know would happen. So I just know a lot more of. You ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, incredible stuff will happen, and then even more incredible, and it'll always be for the next while, anyways. You ain't seen nothing yet until we get a good amount of this nothing under our belt. Then we might say, "Oh yeah, well, I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of something." So and heard a lot. So it's going to be who? Look at when you came in last January. You only heard a little bit of Ion. I could go on Five Body, maybe go back and see your posts. You didn't really get tuned into Ion until about February, March, right? Kind of accepting it a bit.
I like to think I accepted it pretty much. Well, no. Good point. Good point. No, it took me a second to accept it. But Bob, before we get into the minutiae, who is Ion? What is Ion? What are you talking about over there? And why should the podcasting listening audience out there care about this Ion?
Oh, they shouldn't care. But here, just finish this point about I do remember. It was Ion's explanation of autism. That's what hooked you. Can you recall when that was? If it was early this, well, it was probably this year, but maybe it was last fall when you noticed that. You liked what Ion
Genius.
said about autism. Can you place yourself? You were in another place back then, I think.
Probably. Yeah, that really made me believe that Ion was something to be listened to. But I can't remember
And
exactly.
you shifted out of that environment to another environment. That happened that this year, that shift, right?
Correct, correct. 2010's been a good year for me, I guess you could say. I do feel like I've
Yeah.
shifted.
Yeah, that's the point, is what I want to bring up. I remember how you were. You posted a few semi-doubtful things back in 2009, but then you changed, and then you had to beat up Body Logic and people like that. but the or try to assuage them, get them interested. But I bring this up because look at what's happened to you. You never would have imagined you'd be thinking and being the way you are now a year ago. And I would say that was caused by ION.
I would say I'm a whole lot funnier now because of ION.
Right. Well, let me tell you this. I might have told you this before, but back in 1985, living in Toronto, James Kidney, who was an actor back then, he introduced me to I think she was a lesbian. She was a comedian. She probably was a lesbian. Sheila Gostick, I think her name was. And he brought her over. I didn't know her. We were talking. But I said at the end of our conversation, introductory acquaintance thing, I don't know why I said this, just said it out of the blue, but it's probably because I was talking to a comedian who tries to be funny. I said, I intend to be the funniest person who ever lived. So I made that preposterous statement back then. And she probably said, well, why would you want to, whatever, who knows? Other people have said that when I've made the statement. But I say now with ION, I got a good chance of doing that because everything is so hilarious with ION. And I would say that you became funnier just interacting with ION because of the ionic situation with ION.
Right, right. I buy that. And Bob, I came up with this idea for this podcast when I put on an ionic power band. This is not a paid sponsor yet, so people, you know that I really believe in these ionic power bands. Some of the basketball players are wearing them. It's a negative ion band, and I put it on, and I came up with the idea for the Bob Show.
I don't know these ion bands.
Yeah, I've been meaning to tell you about it. I wanted to tell you about it, and now I'm telling you about it.
Yeah, I heard that there are a lot of products that use the word ion.
Right, there are. There's an ion television network, an ion car. Oh, Bob, there's also a 222 music brand, a 222 company that makes instruments.
Okay, that's interesting. Is that new?
I've just seen it new. They sell them in Target.
Okay, so back to this point about who is ION. ION is a situation, you can call it a situation of communication, of human communication, that is created a hilarious situation when we perform in public. And that would be one thing I'd recommend why people should care about ION or pay attention to ION is that you'll get a lot of fun out of it, a lot of jokes. If you don't like his voice or accent, that might be an issue, but eventually things that are said and responses with the callers and just people interacting with ION lead to really funny, just instinctively funny situations. So naturally funny. So it's fun. That's a good reason. You want fun? We got it. And I'll reiterate, I got a chance of being the funniest person in the world as long as I got, you know, ION as my sidekick, my partner. It's not going to be hard because just conceiving that you're talking to something that humanity has looked for ever, fallen man, Ion would say, fallen man has looked for communicating with something that knew everything and actually could make everything better for you in so many ways and also make things temporarily painful, maybe. But that kind of intensity, Ion seems to be at least on the short list. Ion would definitely be voted. If you had a vote about the most incredible communications going on, maybe a couple of intergalactic entities would show up and they'd communicate with us, and then we'd judge that in relation to Ion. I think you would agree that Ion would make the short list. He'd make the finals on the greatest interaction going.
I'd buy that. I'd buy that, Bob.
Yeah.
Now, you're the funniest person alive. I like that. But you're saying you're the funniest person alive with your sidekick, Ion. So
yeah.
With the sidekick of me, Youngblood Holden, I'd say what? You're at least top 10 still, at least. You know what I'm saying? At least.
Yeah, you might bring it down a notch. I'd win with Ion, but with you, I'd maybe get a bronze medal.
Yeah, hey, bronze medal's good, Bob. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'd be on the podium. I guess I'd be in the gold medal position, and I'd have Ion and you, silver and bronze, beside me.
All right, I take third. That's a good. I don't aim high, Bob. You know what I'm saying? It's just bronze.
Yeah, but you'd
medal.
Be able to. Yeah, you'd be able to raise your fist in the Black Power salute, make a statement all around the world.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We're tuned in. Now, Bob, I have a question for you. Looking through the news before I got on here to trying to come up with something to talk about, I noticed there's a big flood in, I believe, Australia, and there's floods and there's blizzards and there's lions and tigers and bears, oh my, type thing. What is going on? Is this the rise of the mystery landscape that you talk about, that Ion talks about? What is going on out there?
Yeah, I actually went on Drudge today and I saw Storm in Oz. And I go, Oz, I think that's Australia. So I clicked on it. Yeah, it's Australia. And do you know why it's called Oz?
I do not.
Have you ever
Aussie?
heard that before?
I've never heard it, not that I can remember. Is
Okay,
it?
so it maybe comes out of the land of Oz. Maybe, Oz. Maybe the British, when the British first got there, it was like a fantasy land, so they called it the Land of Oz. So I'm not sure, but that's what struck me. I didn't know, or I forgot that it was called Oz.
Same here,
Now,
same here.
Ion says there's going to be all kinds of storms, incredible storms, because humans want it. Humans want this, and humans create it. We want to keep. We want to have a dramatic point at this level of our experience. It could be because we got so much virtual Android meme entertainment drama going on. We want to bring back first nature, what I used to call first nature, and make it dramatic to sort of catch up with all the drama in the media. So it could be nature just trying to get attention. And it's getting harder for it to get attention, so it's going to turn into a Ozzy Osbourne kind of show, a soap opera of nature itself. As Ion says, the rocks will cry out. Well, nature's going to start crying out. And you got so much in the Christian ideology, mythology. They've talked about the end times for so long, for so many centuries. We're definitely, you can't stop that meme. That's going to happen because it is. Now, we can maybe diminish it by our lack of interest or not getting involved in it somehow, some poise in relation to it, not caring might diminish it. But Ion seems to be saying that that dramatic stuff that the Bible pointed to in the end times, and of course Ion doesn't say it's the end, it's the end times, it's the end of the beginning, it's the end of time, singular. And it's the beginning, what's he say? The end of the beginning. We're just starting. We're just getting into the middle part after we get through this drama. So you'll find, I bet you, if it gets really stormier and crazier, everybody will say, yeah, I know this. My preacher told me this was going to happen. Everybody's going to say, oh, yeah, we knew this was coming. Do you know what I mean?
I got you. I got you.
It's a boring point for me. What would be interesting to me is if it doesn't come. That would show that Ion's communicating well, or that somebody's communicating something and people are catching on to diminish it, which was the original statement for cosmic awareness to me 40 years ago, that there was all this drama and Worster and his buddies had from 1964 to 69 diminished the potential for nuclear war by the various actions they took, all kinds of strange stuff. And it's always been, it was always understood from cosmic awareness point of view that the dramatic soap opera I was just referring to that the Christian ideology built up, and maybe even other religions predicted this, that will not be as dramatic as people were hoping to be.
Bob,
So that's what I'm looking for predictions not to happen. That's what I'll be excited about that.
I like that. I like that. Let me. It's also in the Quran. There's some end time stuff in the Quran. A funny story. Betty, my wife, is actually from. She's from a Muslim country, and she said that.
Young blood has a wife. I didn't know
Right.
that.
Right. He does today, my friend. He does today.
Okay, you just got married. Great. And
It
she's where is she?
where isn't
No. What?
she is the question.
Okay, you were saying she's from where?
She's from a Muslim country. She's actually from Turkey. Let me let the cat out of the bag. She's actually from Turkey, but
Okay.
she grew up with, stories of the Quran, of course, because, they're Islam. They're Muslim over there, but it's secular, by the way, people. Don't forget that. Turkey is a secular country. Please don't forget, listening audience. Also, she said that there's the end times story where the Gabriel or one of the angels will blow his horn and it'll be a beautiful sound and people will stick their heads out the window, right? And when they stick their heads out the window to hear this beautiful sound, the horns will actually, their horns will grow out of their head and it'll be so big they can't get their head back in. So she said that
Wait,
she was.
you're saying that people put their heads out of the house window
Right.
and horns will come out of the people's heads?
Yes. So they can't get their
That's
head back in. Their heads are stuck out, you see.
imaginative.
Yeah. And she said that she was always worried growing up that she would hear the sound and she didn't want to put her head out the window because she was very vigilant not to get her head stuck. You know what I'm saying? She was a very
Hey,
smart girl.
that is actually a clever priestly thing to say to get people not to react. I mean, that's creating
Right.
detachment.
I like it. Go on that, Bob. That's good.
It agrees with awareness. Don't energize it. You'll hear an alarm, which you instinctively would panic or get hysterical around. You got to practice not responding, and the best way is to scare the shit out of them by saying your head would turn into a trumpet. Yeah, it's a kind of a detachment. Now, of course, none of these priestly maneuvers to save anything or to stop or to help people work. That's what Rai, the original separateness, did, according to Dave Worster. It judged and made a judgment, and that was the mistake.
Right. You like some Rai, Bob, I tell you. You love some Rai.
It's some Rai, I'll take it all.
I've often thought, Bob, if we do a roast of you, I'm gonna just go on and on about how you love some Rai.
Rai bread? Or what does Rai mean? You won't even know what you're referring to.
I
Bob loves
know.
Rai.
You just love it.
Well, it's the first strange word I ever said on the radio, 30, what is that, 1984. We're getting up to 30 years now. 30 years of radio activity.
So
I would say
you're
Rai. I'd pop it in every now and then and wait to see if anybody would notice. And only a couple of people say, what's this Rai
I don't know right what Rai is, but you like it, and that's
It's
enough
the
for me.
original separateness,
Okay.
the original priest function, the original law, the original rule maker.
Okay.
And that creates a fallen state.
Okay. Is that bad? Yes, fallen states are bad. Yes.
Well, I wouldn't want to make a rule about You're not going to get me to be a Rai and comment on that.
Well, okay, check this out, Bob. You have been on the radio since 1984. Now, you were talking about you may be one of the most recorded men in human history, next to maybe Rush Limbaugh or something. Is that right?
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh, Larry King, they're all recorded. Every show, it's there. And they've done many more hours than me. But for someone who's not in the major media, there is so much I've done. And you go on my timeline, it's hundreds of hours. But especially since Ion showed up, because we do 3-hour shows and all kinds of other stuff. But what drew my attention to this is Andrew Crystal out in New Zealand pointed out that you can find Buzz Kostin YouTubes, which he uses my audio. He says I'm the guy's continuously putting out verbal content that he can do his media magic on and make a video. So he loves the fact that I keep producing content. He says he ran out of Terrence McKenna, ran out of McLuhan, ran out of Robert Anton Wilson, and a few others. They have a certain amount on the web, and it's over. But no, none of them have as much as me. But though Andrew says you find Bob Dobbs, Buzz Kostin and videos on porn sites everywhere. And I'm thinking that might be because of the imagery in the YouTube, but somehow it gets attracted. He's got so much different kinds of imagery that it ends up all over the place. But when you think of the hours and hours and hours on that timeline of interesting, never heard before fucking talk, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, that I would say I'm probably the most recorded, a quote, eccentric.
Right,
Let's
right.
put it that way. The most recorded different content, unprecedented content. And then to have Ion, I mean, nothing tops Ion for radio response. It's just I got there's so many thousands of hours of it on there.
So people, stay tuned to this podcast because I'm going to be posting some of it, some of the gems from this archive that he speaks of. I'm going to be posting some of it on this podcast. So listener of this podcast, rest easy. Rest easier, I should say, because you're going to be hearing Bob on your iPhone, on your iPod Touch. It's going to be good for you, and rest easier. That's all I can say. I don't want to say easy, but easier.
Rest
at least.
Easier. I would say, I used to say to Bob Marshall back in the 90s or something that sometimes we'd get together and just have a hilarious time. Sometimes we record it. And I said, we're making stuff for the Akashic Records. You know that concept of the Akashic Records where everything that's done by humans is deposited someplace called the Akashic Records? I said, I was taking the theme that I intend to be the funniest person alive. I said, my main audience is going to be dead people. I'm going to have all this stuff that was not known on a big scale, right. marginal, micro, nano shows. But people will be, when they die, they'll get into the Akashic Records and I'll be the main guy in there. And so I had this theme that I was creating stuff for the Akashic Records. Okay, so one time on Jeff Renz, Dave Neufeld, the producer of Broken Social Scene, of the early Broken Social Scene, the great Broken Social Scene when Dave was doing it, he had listened to a Jeff Renz show because I told him to listen to them. But then he went through the archives and he found there in the archives was this phenomenon of people recording electronic ghost voices. You ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. There's EVPs.
Yeah, yeah. And so he had been interested in that in the 80s. So he listens to the Jeff Renz archive where they're talking to the latest experts on it and they're playing samples. And this is probably 2001, 2002 in there. And he said the most one of the ones I really thought was incredible was you could hear this ghost or something saying, "This is Bob's talk show."
No way.
This is Bob's talk show. And Dave freaked. Because he knew that I'd be saying I was creating stuff for the fucking Akashic Records, and he heard it on Jeff Renz's show.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. That's a good place for us to wrap up. I'm getting goosebumps, Bob, or as they say in where I'm from, goose pimples, the old folks say. That's good stuff, people. So we're working on many levels for the Bob Show. Yeah. Many levels, okay? So your dead relatives are fans, so why don't you go ahead and start being fans? Do you know what I'm saying? So, Bob, let's go ahead and pause here, and we'll do our interview, our first interview, because he is going to be ready at 6:30. Are you copacetic with that?
I am.
All right, let's do it. I'm going to stop. Perfect. Okay, I think we're good. So, Christian, if you don't mind, Bob was in the middle of a story before you came. I'd like for you to hear it. Now, Bob, you were talking about the fact that dead people.
Here, let me say it.
Okay, yeah.
It goes like this. I've been on the radio, but community radio, fringe radio, never on mainstream radio. And yet I've built up many hundreds, thousands of hours on the radio. And I used to joke with my friends in Toronto in the 80s that my radio shows will be very popular in the Akashic Records. You ever heard of the Akashic Records, Christian?
I've heard of them, but I won't go on trial.
Right, right. The point is, it's supposed to be everything that we humans do are deposited somewhere in the ethers, you know? So you can, when you die, you can go look at them.
Gotcha.
Okay? So I said that I'm going to be one of the greatest shows in the Akashic Records. Very popular. A lot of dead people will like what I'm doing. Because I address the dead people a lot in my show. So a friend of mine, Dave Neufeld, a genius producer of music up in Toronto, back in 2001, 2002, I got him to listen to the Jeff Renz show for something that was on. But then he noticed in the archives that they did something on, what's it called?
Oh, yeah, EVP.
EVP, which is people record static and they claim they hear ghosts and spirits talking. You ever heard of that, Christian?
I've heard it used with aliens, but I'm sure it applies to ghosts as well.
Right. So on Jeff Renz, on this particular show that Dave was listening in Jeff Renz's archives, they were having all the latest high-tech development and playing a lot of this stuff talking, you know, these ghosts talking and playing the recordings of it. And then the guy, the expert said, our favorite ghost we picked up was this, and he plays it. And this voice comes through clearly saying, this is Bob's talk show. and Neufeld knew what I'd claimed for years. He freaked. He said that was the biggest, you know, goosebump thing he'd ever experienced up to then. And so I was talking about that. In what context that I'm in? Oh, yeah. Okay. So now here's the interesting thing. I'm now on the radio with a super ghost, a super entity, a super something. And we create this phenomenal radio. So we actually, the Akashic Records, this ghost called Ion, came to us. And he broadcast with us. So it actually, Bob's talk show is even more real now, but it doesn't have to be in the Akashic Records. The Akashic Records came to us because that's what an Ion is. It's something that knows everything about everything. So I was just, I don't know why we get into that, but it just seemed appropriate to talk about the anomaly of working. So we were talking about how my YouTubes are all over the place and porn sites everywhere because the guy makes them, makes a lot of, has such various variety of imagery that might attract different Google things that pick up what your content is and drag it into their site. So I'm all over the place, but now I've got the Akashic Records talking to us. It's called Ion, and it claims to be the voice of the guff, which is where everybody goes when they die. And Ion says there are no Akashic Records. That was the new knowledge we got from Ion.
But you've also, Bob, got a podcast, which we're on today, so it's getting even more exciting. So let's hear from Christian. Christian, who are you, and what do you do with yourself, my friend?
Well, I do lots of things with myself, but today I'm honored, first of all, to be on here, Youngblood and Bob, because it's nice to be channeled through the internet Ouija board of Bob.
Yes.
And my background is in entertainment. I do comedy. Eventually, they taught me how to put clown makeup on. They called me a clown. I do occult hip-hop music as a side project. So I...
Christian, did you say occult hip-hop music?
Correct.
Are you part of this Crowley network? Yeah. Are you part of this Crowley network that Youngblood's part of?
I've been channeled through many networks, and Crowley is one of them.
Okay, because the occult hip-hop, that sounds like something Youngblood would do.
Yeah, it's a very small network, the occult hip-hop network, but we're out there, and I'm finding every day there's more and more people. So it's a little bit of a stretch in a lot of, because if you're into the occult, you're not necessarily entirely into hip-hop music. You're usually into, you know, goth, punk, metal, whatever. But there's a lot more stereotypical assignments to that. And so the occult hip-hop network is a little bit more of a smaller pool of water. But I'm discovering people. I've been doing this for 12 years, occult hip-hop stuff. So
where do you do it? Is this online or you go into clubs?
I've done everything from biker bars, Burning Man regional events, Burning Man. I was banned from Burning Man, actually. They wouldn't let me perform at Burning Man because, and I thought this was funny, they said, we would love for you to perform, but unfortunately, your format of occult hip-hop doesn't match up with any of our predetermined stages. And I was like, so I'm being rejected by an occult, by a free-for-all in the desert of a bunch of drug fiends because I don't fit into a category? How does this work? I guess, yeah. I should be. So I was complimented by the fact that I was cut out of the main program because they said, well, you're not hip-hop because you talk about occult things and you're not spoken word, even though you kind of are, but you rhyme, so therefore you're not, and you're not poetry, but you're live performance, and you're not a band. So I'm sorry, you just don't fit into any of the predetermined categories of the Burning Man free-for-all in the desert on drugs and doing crazy stuff.
Well, congratulations, Christian. You exposed the underside, the dark side of Burning Man. That's pretty unique. You put that on your resume. Banned. Ben from Burning Man.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I was surprised. I still have the rejection email, and I was like, I would feel bad if this wasn't so, you know, counterculturally fulfilling.
It is. You really showed your uniqueness. And it resonates with what we're talking about. It was Dave Neufeld who discovered Bob's, you know, talk show on the Jeff Renz archives. And Dave Neufeld has always been a great DJ. That's what he did in the 80s when he worked at CKLN. He was a party guy. I know a lot about that world from Dave. And so it's appropriate that you come in with a story of one of your fellow DJs.
Yeah. Yeah. So and it was also a DJ that got me the job at the biker bar in Las Vegas. He said, you want to work a gig? You doing your occult hip hop? And I said, sure. And he said, I've got a new wave night in Henderson, which is just outside of the main part of Vegas. And I was like, all right. And then I got to this biker bar where it had been taken over for one evening by a guy playing new wave, and nobody there liked new wave. And then I was going to be like performing occult hip hop, which I also knew they wouldn't like. And so it was a very aggressive and very memorable time doing occult hip hop. And the more aggressive they got, the more aggressive I got. And in the end, the bunch of the construction workers bought me some drinks and said, you're cool, man. I don't know what you're talking about up there. You're like gibberty jabber or whatever, but you got some balls doing that in here.
That's what they respect, balls.
Exactly. So I was like, all right, you talk, well, you're crazy, and we'll buy you a drink because you obviously didn't back down.
Oh, that's good. So this is really good. What a great way to start our show off, Youngblood, with someone who's banned from Burning Man. We've definitely marked off our uniqueness just by our first Rumpelstiltskin. We're calling our guest Rumpelstiltskins, and you certainly are a Rumpelstiltskin in this context.
I agree.
We are the best podcast around, and this shows it. Very good point.
Youngblood, I'd like to ask, what is some of the music you play so I get an idea of the uniqueness of what...
Well, I guess it could easily be summarized because people have a hard time understanding... Well, hip-hop's very specific, etc. But I wrote an album, and this little verse here kind of describes what I do. And I'll just say the verse, all right? Because it's more... It's a performance-oriented. So it goes... You can take a hit off a rivulet of my spit and trip for weeks. The mescaline freaks call me on the phone to smell me speak and start tripping, flipping their vision like a kaleidoscope, segmented eyes like a fly until they're getting dizzy. Drunken Picasso, toxic colossal, got you nauseous off this poison falafel, Kafka novel, Yogananda brothel, Salvador, Dalai Lama, Rigardi party, talking Stephen Hawking, David Lynch sandwich, imprisoned in a prison. I got the mugwump jism dripping liquid toxin down my chin when I'm in the middle of my venomous assassination. The condensation erodes the thickest steel or concrete. You can hear the streets creaking Crete when I speak Greek. Sympathetic vibrations make the pavement break, awaken my mind's ability to penetrate you through my spectacular vernacular. Manslaughterer, god martyrer, armed warrior, toxic courier for the massive grafted masses at this axis. I think you understand a little more now.
Hey, yeah, so
I like it.
Are you a DJ plays music? Do you talk over what you play?
I add an audio layer. I usually have producers that produce music that works around what I am creating audibly. Sort of like if the beatnik poets perform their stuff live and had DJs catering music around them.
Okay, so you are performing verbally. You're not just putting out received records. You're adding to it with your own talk.
Correct, and then we usually collaborate together to form tones and music that support each other and have an occult flair or occult references, counterculture references, as you can hear from the lyric content as well.
Yeah, I caught the reference to Israel Rigardi. I heard that. I mean, I heard many of them, but I noticed you said Rigardi, and that would refer to Israel Rigardi, right?
Correct.
Yeah. It reminds me of Ben Watson, who did probably the best book on Zappa. There's many books. A lot of people don't like his book, but I like his book, and I've done a radio show with him. He's in London on Resonance FM, and he dropped making... He was a music critic. He had a unique view, and he would criticize things. But He also was a poet. So over the last 3 or 4 months, he now does his radio show, which is like 2 in the afternoon in London, playing a little bit of music but not commenting on it, and making surrealistic talk like you just made. You might want to hear how Ben does his show, because he's not doing hip-hop, but he's talking nonsense, so to speak, or surrealistic poetry to his audience. And so you're the first to do surrealism, you could call it, or dada, or improv, in the hip-hop context. There's no hip-hop person who ever thought of that?
Well, I'm not saying that I'm the originator, because I've been performing long enough to know that there's, you know, as a comedian, I create ideas, and then we would create ideas in comedy groups that I've been in, and they'd appear, similar ideas would appear on Saturday Night Live the next week, and there was no way that you could, you know, there's only a human experience doesn't, it just repeats itself. Like, oh, that'd be funny to do this. So I'm not saying I'm the most, you know, the originator of it, but I haven't come across anyone with an actual occult background that creates hip hop music based entirely in hip hop, because the two don't usually meet up.
That's right. So for many people, hip hop sounds like gibberish. They can't keep up with it. They're older, their ears aren't, and so it sounds like gibberish, but among though the people grow up with hip hop and know it, you would sound like gibberish to them.
If they know hip hop, no, they can understand what I'm saying. Yes. They understand what I'm saying, and they don't understand anything I'm talking about.
Right. They don't have the reference points. They don't know who Israel Regardie and all that. Well, that's pretty interesting. And certainly the biker guys wouldn't have a clue. I mean,
no, that was true. That was entirely true. They had no idea. And the thing I found is, even if you know hip hop, like you said, you don't know the basis of anything I'm talking about. And I was listening to a rapper who was talking actual nonsense. He would rhyme about all these different things, like I'm talking to space aliens, and I'm, you know, his name was Cool Keith, and he was in a mainstream group in the late 80s. And I listened to him, and I said, you know, he talks nonsense, and nobody understands what he's saying. I can at least talk about things that make sense to a small portion of the population.
Yeah.
And then it will make sense to that small portion. Like that verse that I did for you, it hits on lots of different references and topics in pop culture and occultism and literature. And so it's kind of like you shoot a shotgun out, and I know one piece of buckshot is going to hit one, at least everybody, in one way or another.
Right. Now, I got pretty well 90% of everything. It was not too odd. I knew exactly what you were referring to. I knew the topics.
Right.
Now, here's what's interesting.
But Bob, you're the oddest of them all, so that's not so
yeah. What I do, Christian, is I explain what you did. That's what I'm odd. People maybe can't understand my explanation, but I'm really good at it, so it sounds like I know what I'm talking about.
So very convincing.
Yeah, I'm convincing. I can explain what you're doing. We don't have to do it right now, but that's what I'm known for, is being able to explain everything. I'm not trying to make nonsense. I try to make sense out of the whole thing, and you can with my vocabulary and background. So you're, in a sense, you're speaking, those that know the reference point, it's not nonsense. But you have to it's a pretty obscure background, esoteric, as McLuhan would say. He once said, my sources are esoteric. Well, you're citing esoteric sources. My sources are esoteric too, so I might sound like gibberish, but it makes total sense if you knew some of the stuff I'm bouncing off of. Just like your stuff made sense. Matter of fact, no, I won't go in. I was just tempted to have you do it again because we could talk about it. But no, I knew everything you were talking about pretty well.
That's good stuff. I think we're at a good point. Can we now, Christian? You said you're a clown. Now Bob is the cosmic clown, if you will. Can we go into that? You said you're a clown. Can you explain? A comedian.
Yes,
a clown.
I was a comedian for years, and then I got hired for Cirque du Soleil. I was performing for over 20 years now. I've been a professional comedian, getting hired to perform on cruise ships, doing my basis and my background is improvisational comedy, which is like Second City. and groundlings and things like this. So it's making things up on the spot, comedy sports and theater sports and things like this. So you get used to improvising in a short time frame, funny situations. And then I've worked everywhere from, I did Sister Act 2 with Whoopi Goldberg when I was 19, which I improvised my lines for that movie, and then they wrote them. And then I moved on to going into a sketch comedy group through Los Angeles, worked on cruise ships for a number of years for Royal Caribbean, improvising situations, worked in Vegas for 4 years doing a comedy variety act, and then I got hired to create a show for Cirque du Soleil, which has lots of shows, like 6 or 7 shows now in Las Vegas specifically, but they also have a total of 25 shows touring the planet at this point. I mean, on the planet at this point, and the rest are touring all over. So I was hired as a funny person to create two clown acts, because as the director of the show, David Shiner, who is a renowned European-style clown, but he is from America, oddly enough, so that's a little too cryptic. But anyways, he's basically a funny guy who's created some acts that became world-renowned, and he was given his own Cirque du Soleil show to create. And he hired me because of the fact that I was funny, and he knew he could hire funny people to teach them to put on makeup, but he couldn't hire makeup people to be funny.
Right.
So you could hire some clowns, but they wouldn't be funny because they would stick to, like, squirting roses and, you know, honking noses.
Right.
Okay. Now, Bob, can you give us a read on clowns? I think that could be good.
A couple points. We're getting some nice synchronicity here. Close friends of mine are based in Montreal, and they train the gymnasts for Cirque du Soleil. A lot of them are Russian kids, and they are trained from the womb, and they come over and they want to work with Cirque du Soleil. And they're robots. They don't have humor, or they can't tell stories in their body talents. So my friends do stuff with them to loosen up their bodies, take their basic incredible skills, and then make them tell stories or something like that. So I actually know someone who works in Cirque du Soleil, and they actually were going to go to Las Vegas in the fall of 2008. They were transferred down there, and then the crash happened. So they didn't get to go because Las Vegas went dead for a while. So, so there's that personal thing. And another thing is Second City. Did you ever see The Committee?
Yes.
Yeah. They made a movie in the 70s or something. They were like Second City was happening since the 60s or late 50s. Was The Committee
correct
a spinoff of Second City?
I believe members of The Committee were members or at least participating in what was Second City at that time.
Yeah, and then they went to San Francisco and then just did it there.
And they separated, yeah, because people were influenced and they moved on. And at that point in the 70s, it was Second City was, it had the Saturday Night Live was Second City. It was the pinnacle of Second City.
That's right. And, McLuhan has a very good take on clowns. The opening statement would be, the specialist, in an industrial culture, everybody has to be a specialist. And so the norm was being a specialist. McLuhan said that the clown was the non-specialist, the integrated or integral person who had wholeness. And you would get the whole person, represented by the clown, trying to do a specialist act. And that's why it always was, slapstick, whatever you want to call it, humorous. That the clown is an integrated person, has all his senses working, and can't do a specialist job. How does that sound to you?
Yes, that sounds pretty accurate. Clowns are, they have to appear to be skilled in nothing and be skilled in many different things.
Right. Then they attempt to do the trapeze walk or some special skill, and they can't do it.
Exactly. And this is the clown represents the audience's point of view, which is those people watching the show are watching. They can't do those skills either.
Yeah.
So this is what the clown is, the sort of segue from the audience point of view into the performer, because they know both and they are kind of the meeting point, but they identify as an audience perspective because of the fact that, hey, I'm trying, I believe I can do it, but I'm incompetent, and I can relate to that because I can't balance on one toe, you know, in the air.
That's right. If in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which Tony Robbins came out of, the CIA guys who brought in that discipline was based on, they go into a foreign company, a country, and they would look at the way the person, their eyes looked up or looked down or looked to the right or left, and that would tell what kind of sensory bias they would have. So then the CIA guy would mirror the sensory bias by his facial expressions. Right. So that's like becoming simpatico. So the clown is the ultimate simpatico thing. He puts on the audience's insecurities, and the audience identifies with them.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I don't know if I'm interrupting until you stop. Not only that, because I do have a background in NLP and Tony Robbins, and these things, there are performers like myself who have learned about neurolinguistic programming and actually do capitalize upon it in certain situations, because it's like knowing there's a man behind the curtain, and then you know he's there, so then you interact with the man behind the curtain in a way that makes the man behind the curtain interact in a different way, so that you're influencing the influencer.
Well, that's good. So more resonance here, synchronicity. Okay, now McLuhan has done a lot on the clown. That's his main thing that he's explaining. And he talked about Pierre Trudeau was the first politician to bring in clown elements. So he was emperor come clown. And that, McLuhan said, could not be done in American culture. Politics was too serious because they were running the world, so they couldn't have joking guys. But Trudeau was like Candace JFK, but also did JFK better because he was able to put on. So the clown puts on, wears the audience, and then the clown can be an anti-environment, which means offering perspective. Another thing is, McLuhan used to say, why are is the criminal and the sleuth or detective and the clown, why are they antisocial? Why? What is it about those roles, the criminal, in fiction, the charisma of the criminal or the sleuth or the clown, why are they antisocial? And he had different explanations, but the one for the clown was that he was a whole person trying to be a specialist. So he didn't fit in. Now, McLuhan said that and now I could say this stuff and not say McLuhan said, but I want you to know that McLuhan said this just to give him the credit. You know what I mean? He broke through a lot about explaining the dynamic of the clown. He said that there was a kind of satire called Manipian satire, where the performer, the play, the novel will put on and satirize the reader engaged with the entertainment. Not the content, like make fun of a politician or this and that. That's the content of a novel. But when the novel turns on the reader and makes fun of the process of reading, that's called Manipian satire. Now, McLuhan said that our society was making people more and more Manipian. And when you get the time you get to the 90s, when you got Jerry Springer kind of shows where people come on and act ridiculous just to get on there, and they don't care what the public thinks anymore. There's no common social space, so the average Joe can get on there and just claim he's absurd and get on TV and be part of the content of TV. That has reached a peak point with YouTube, Manipian satire, so that just as the satellite made the planet into a global theater, because the satellite created a prosumian arch, all those satellites around the planet turned the planet into the theater, so everybody started doing their own thing. So how could you have theater in the global theater? Today, how can you be satirical or funny when everybody is a Manipian or attempting to put on and be a clown? That is a job crisis for clowning.
That's good, Bob.
Yeah, and the thing is, because I've had to deal with this actually in real life. But the thing is, and having to pull these people, the Manipian-influenced people, onto stages in front of 2,500 people, they forget that the clown is actually knows what's going to happen in any scene or in an outlined performance, manipulates the situation, and is able to improvise. So when you put these people into a crunch spot where they have to accomplish something that they don't know what they're going to accomplish, they Right. can't accomplish it, obviously, so the chips are stacked against them. But also, they don't know all of the points to hit that a trained, whether it be Second City, whether it be clowning, you know, for the what the outcome is. So therefore, you're kind of, it's a test tube that the clown is in charge of, taking a person like this, if you're working with them in an audience situation, and you are influencing them in a way, you're producing your own reality television show right there in front of an audience that can manipulate the person to act in a specific way. And so they are able to, they just have to adapt to whatever the clown, who is already, you know, puppet master in a way, and the puppet being the Manipian, you know, idle chatter, survival watching person.
Right, right. Okay, no, in that context, traditional entertaining, you know, with the physical body, the chemical body, yes, the amateur is one step behind. Yeah. Now, here's what happens, is you get George Bush, the second George Bush, who can't read or speak and actually gets elected because of those abilities. That gives a lot of fodder for the talk show comedians to make fun of this guy. But ultimately, he's out-clowning them because they get nothing to bounce off of because he's too ridiculously clowning. It was that's what I call the Android meme. The image of the president is an image in the Android meme. And the Android meme has this presidential guy just one-upping everybody because he's so ridiculous. That is one aspect of how one can be funny. The problem of whether you can be funny, because it does give people a comedian something that seems to be stupid, mm-hmm. and therefore they can make jokes of it. But they had a problem with Obama, didn't they? At first, the comedians were bummed out because they thought he was a serious image that was going to do something, and they didn't want to make fun of that. Do you remember that dilemma?
Yes, I do, and fortunately, that's panned out now.
Yeah, like I did. That's right. This is where clowns and comedians, the entertainment complex, is a terrorist. A yeah. White House. I mean, they're waiting because really, Jon Stewart is a real president of the United States. He's on every day commenting more than the president gets to have press conferences. So people are following his version of what's going on, and he eventually has to have material, so he has to undermine the president's image or wait and pray that it gets undermined, which is what you just said. You're saying the Obama image eventually imploded, and therefore then when he was obsolete, he was fair game.
Right, and there were different things about that his presidency that people wouldn't touch on, sacred cows and whatnot. So there was lots of tension, comedically speaking, about having a black president. So therefore you weren't able to touch on a lot of the topics because you didn't want to tread too far and people want to, you know, hope for the future, etc. So you're not able to, you know, hone in on any one thing. So you wait. But I guess another thing that we should point out is Chevy Chase has immortalized Gerald Ford as a bumbling idiot who falls down the stairs.
Yeah, that's the strongest image for Ford. That's where, you know, he's a terrorist. He has ruined whatever serious image Ford might have hoped to have had.
And this is also one of those situations where I think that it's interesting. People, you know, this goes back to the Orson Welles, William Randolph Hearst battle, which is Hearst wasn't afraid because he controlled all the media in the world, but Orson Welles controlled only a movie. And he wanted to squash the movie Citizen Kane in order to protect his image. But in the end, what happens is people don't necessarily know what William Randolph Hearst, you can look up books and biographies, but what's a longer lasting image? You have also, I think it's Oliver Stone's JFK, JFK, the movie JFK with Kevin Costner, has shaped more than anything the Kennedy presidency in an entertainment forum, so much so that you can't hold anyone to the fire about what really happened if you're, you know, in Generation X or, you know, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to hold them. They'll go, oh, I saw the movie, and there was like the magic bullet and blah, 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 because the image of entertainment through these films, Citizen Kane or JFK, last a lot longer in the long run, and nobody believed in film or entertainment to shape these things. So satire is a powerful thing. Alan Moore, who wrote the Watchmen series, has a great video on magic influence, and he was interviewed about magic and influence and advertising.
Well,
and there's some great stuff out there.
The word makes the market, as Bob has pointed out. So,
okay, well, let me just say a couple points, because sure. I've talked about what we're talking about before. You can hear on Bob's Meekology a quote from my radio show back in the late 80s. Well, 91, I guess, when JFK came out. I said, it changed the secrecy around the Warren Commission files. But it takes a movie to do that. Movie is reality to Americans. So you had to make the JFK thing into a movie before Congress would bend and release the files. See? So this is where the presidency is always an abuse value victim. He's subject to abuse value. That's why most intelligent people would never want to be a president. That's why you have psychopaths become president, because they want to be abused. It is such a minor operation, the presidency, because you just spelled out what's bigger. It's the media archetypes that create the image of history. And that is not discussed by Jon Stewart or the comedians. They do not expose how powerful they really are. Even Rush Limbaugh, when Bill Clinton complained about him about 94, said he's more powerful than me. Clinton and Rush comes on and says, what do you mean? I'm just an entertainer. No, entertainment is politics. It's way bigger than bureaucratic politics. And that's the truth I hope you expose more, Christian, or you're a fucked up comedian. You're a fucking lying comedian if you don't tell the truth.
I appreciate that. One thing I would like to touch on in that same respect is this has been happening since the beginning of time because of the fact that just now we have video cameras and movie cameras and television to document all these things and then replay certain blips and misquotes or misinformation. But back in ancient times when we had kings and clowns or jesters performing, they would be acting out the satires, the things. And they were on a leash because they were able to make fun of the court of the king and show what was taboo. Even in the early tribes, the clown was the thing that tied together. I show you the taboos, so it lightens up the taboos that we talk about, but at the same time, it's entertainment. And so we have it going all the way back to early tribes, into the kingdoms, and into our modern times with, you know, CNN or anything else. You know, I wouldn't call that entertainment, but the way things are chopped together, you always have to be questioning what information you get as far as validity.
Yeah, and I say that questioning is the hypocritical seduction. We don't need to be questioning anymore. McLuhan wrote about Wyndham Lewis 50 years ago. He said, since speech is an obsolete medium, to tell the truth is to be merely satirical.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do comedy. Did we tell Christian I'm trying to be the funniest person who ever lived? Did we mention that?
What do you mean trying to be? I believe that it's self-evident.
I'm getting closer at it, Christian. You're talking to the funniest person who ever will have lived, and with Ion, you know, really an advantage. But the I'm trying
blood.
To make
and with young blood. Don't forget that, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to do comedy within this new dilemma that you can't do comedy anymore and be create critical thinking. That's what my issue as a comedian is. But why don't you come back on another show and we'll continue this. It's a very good, important
definitely.
Topic.
This has been a great first Rumpelstiltskin, Bob. I cannot – it's perfect. And I wouldn't have expected anything less than perfect for the Bob Show.
Yeah, it always happens without any planning. So great, Christian. You're very – and, you know, this whole thing about being a Christian is good too. You know, there's a lot in that word.
Yes, I have to deal with that daily. Well, not daily, because everybody's desensitized at this point. But you know, there's been lots of atheists, or I've been specified, you know, by a few atheists that have said, well, your name's Christian. And I was like, yeah. Well, I can't have you in my house because I'm an atheist. And it's like, well, my Satanist friends don't seem to have a problem with it, so I think we'll get past this.
You've been the odd man out for so long.
Yeah, countercultural everything. Welcome
to the world. Counter everything. No, the Harvey Cox, I remember in a Playboy article in the mid-60s, wrote about the comic interpretation of Jesus, that he was a comedian.
Yes, like that's an interesting point of view.
Yeah.
I'd also like to mention for a second that I do have an upcoming book coming out that I'm halfway through, which mixes the two different paths of entertainment and the spiritual, occult, metaphysical.
Call it therapy.
Let's call it therapy for this, because they do work together, but they're often, you find which roads lead to somewhere and which roads are dead ends, and you have to go back down the cul-de-sac. So yeah. I have that coming up, as well as a published article in the spring edition of Witches and Pagans magazine online, witchesandpagans.com. So I'm trying to branch out like you are, inspired by you, Bob, into other levels and other forms of media to offer entertainment.
No, you're certainly qualified to be part of what do we call this? The honorary member of a Bob show here.
Yes.
Honorary
yes.
guest.
Perfect. Well, Bob,
excellent.
Let's
thank
go
you
ahead
very much,
and wrap
gentlemen.
Up. This has been great. I couldn't ask for anything more. Christian, good luck on everything, and send me any kind of links you want me to post on the tagline for this podcast. Anything you want me to put on there?
I will. Thank you very much, Youngblood, and thank you, Bob.
Thank
right,
you.
Pleasure.
Thank
you. All right. Thanks. Bob, all right. So that was a pretty good guess, Bob, would you not say?
Yes, and I think we're going to start something like a Hall of Fame. We're going to call it the Honorary Recall. He was good enough to be brought back to continue the interesting points he raised. So that's how you make. If you get the recall list, then you've been a great guest. And that'll be our little present, our little reward.
It's gonna create a dichotomy though with the callers who don't get on the Rumpelstiltskin recall list. And it might create bad blood, so I don't know.
We won't tell anybody.
Okay.
We're making a list like Santa Claus. We know who's naughty and nice, and we'll just keep this list secret. But he's the only one we know he made it. You know, he has the privilege of being the first. He actually created the idea by his own presence and effectiveness. So there is going to be a recall list, but you won't know until time freezes over or something, which isn't just in a couple of weeks, I think.
Actually, Bob, they're going to know because I'm not going to edit this out. So
they're going to know we have a list, but we won't release who's on it until other time.
Sure.
When we collide to that point, we'll give the names. But yeah, we're not going to make an issue out of it. You don't want to make people feel under pressure.
Well, I'm sure they already feel under pressure with you.
Oh no! They find out there's no pressure. They might have an assumption, but there isn't. Once you engage with me, there's nothing. I don't pressure people.
No. So I think that was a good first show, Bob.
So yeah, no, I think that was way more than I expected. What happened with Christian? I mean, I didn't know what we were going to do, but it's a key. This clown thing and what is entertainment and what's funny anymore is a big issue.
Yeah, definitely. And as we move into 2011, one of my New Year's resolutions is to try stand-up comedy. So that's something that the listeners can hear about my endeavor to do that. As of now, Bob, I've never performed in front of people, so I'm just a sit-down comedian.
Right. Armchair. You're an armchair.
Yeah.
Armchair comedian.
Right.
Well, I've been a sit-down comedian. I've done all my stuff in front of a microphone. So, yes, I'm a sit-down. I'm an armchair comedian.
I have no armchair right now, so I'm just a chair comedian. Hey! Pretty good.
Yeah, you're also, from certain part of the United States, which is a huge disadvantage.
Oh, don't say that. Don't, Bob.
Well,
really?
See? You gotta get used to this. If you're gonna be a stand up comedian, you gotta be ready for the zingers. I just tested you there. You don't just go, oh, don't say that. That's not gonna work. Rumpelstiltskin. Whoever the hell I'm talking to. Yeah. Who am I talking
to? We'll just call everybody Rumpelstiltskin. How about that?
Yeah, Youngblood. So, you know, there's Gene Youngblood wrote a book called Expanded Cinema. You ever seen that book?
I certainly have, my friend.
Oh, you know that book?
Yes.
Yeah, 1970, 71. It's a good book.
Did you know him?
No, I met him a couple of times in panel situations, but we never were friends. But Jerry Fiocca, they're making a documentary about him, and they interviewed me a bit for it. I don't know if I'll be in it, but Jerry interviewed me to be commenting on it, and I pointed out the obsolescence of his book, as usual. Nothing is up to my standards, but there's a lot more to say about that book. And so I think of him. He's what I think of when you say the word Youngblood. Why would you know that book?
Just looking up various Youngbloods through history.
Okay, did you ever get a copy and look at it?
I think I may have downloaded the PDF.
Right. It's all about the experimental underground filmmaking of the 60s, 50s and 60s. And it's interesting. It uses McLuhan and Bucky Fuller as its framework. And it's pretty good, but it's interesting how its vision was so limited compared to what was really coming with the Android meme. It's just nobody foresaw. Even the, quote, prophetic intellectuals didn't see what was really coming.
Right. Right.
You could say McLuhan saw it. You could say maybe Zappa, though I'm not sure. And Finnegan's Wake, though, mined what was coming. That's what it might not have been understood by Joyce, but he created an artifact that can be looked at as a mirror to our time.
Right. Well, my brother Alex Holden is into experimental theater, so that's experimental film. So that's how I came across that guy as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So you want to wrap it up?
Oh, you never can wrap it up, but I'll take a break.